And we have two new ladies who have come to give us a presentation, a talk, a pet talk, or what. One thing I would like to say is that you are sure, I'm well aware, that we on the island have suffered for a whole year without autism services, and that is totally unacceptable. However, that's in the past. You are here with plans, which we have seen. I would like to pay tribute to the chairman of our Adult Social Services Committee, who pursued autism up through to National Health England. Adult Social Services have the statutory power to do that. Children's Social Services do not. But I would like it acknowledged of his work in doing that. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. So it's really great to be here and have the opportunity to give you an update on where we're at with autism. And I think the first thing that we probably need to say is that we acknowledge that it has been an absolute unacceptable position that the island has been in. So we've absolutely held our hands up to that as a partnership, and recognise the distress that that's caused to families and everyone else. And I think we really want that on record, that we are sorry that we're in that position. So I just wanted to talk for a few minutes just give you a little bit of the history. So I think you've probably rehearsed it really well and talked about it a lot, but just to kind of see the journey that we've been on, some of the actions that we've taken since we joined as a partnership, and I'll just explain a little bit about that. Where we're at in terms of the cohort of children that have been on the waiting list and are going through now this new process, and just some of the next steps that we are going through and how we plan to do that. So if that's okay, that's what I plan to do. And I know the paper is really brief that we supplied you with, and there was kind of a couple of reasons for that. One was, at the time there was a lot going on and we really wanted to focus on actually getting the service in place so that we could start to get children seen, and that's really important to us. And the other, it was a really fluid status, so we couldn't kind of say, you know, we've nailed it right here, right now. So we really wanted to be able to give an update today that was as accurate and as up to date as possible. So we're a partnership of the Hampshire and Islandwide CCGs, so we've come together as five CCGs to now work in partnership across both the mainland and the island. And there's some real benefits to doing that. Not least, we've got some really skilled and experts in different fields across the organisations, which is really difficult to have all of the experts on a very small island, whereas, as you can see, the benefits that you get from Children's Services from Hampshire,
very
you've
awesome.
Got that spread of knowledge, expertise, and different people that you can draw upon to support the processes. So I think that's a real strength and benefit. I'm the Deputy Director for the Hampshire Collaborative CCG, so we've got four CCGs that are part of the partnership, and we also manage children's services on behalf of West Hampshire, which are just outside the partnership, but we manage on their behalf too. So we've got that strength now of six CCGs working together across children and maternity services, and we can really draw upon that expertise. And a team of 20 people, whereas in the past they had a team of two people trying to do everything, children's and adults. So I'm hoping that we'll start to see real benefits from that organisational structure. So Catherine and I started to work on the island. So Catherine's our full-time commission manager on the island now. So she's here all of the time and has done an absolutely amazing job working with Cathy's team, working with the Islandwide Trust, to really develop those relationships and to get rid of the skin of some of the challenges that were on the island, and to find out where we needed to focus, what we needed to do, and to make some inroads into doing a lot. So a lot of that has happened. Just in terms of the, so that's kind of organisationally and where we're at. Just in terms of the history of the autism service, and I won't go into you with the details, I know that you've had it and it's been a real source of frustration. So ADRC gave notice last year. They closed their service last November, so they saw the last children last November 2017. There was a backlog of children that they transferred across, for want of a better word across to the Isle of Wight Trust, who at that time hadn't agreed with the CCG to take on those cohorts. So kind of a box load of files went across to the Trust in the hope that they would get the arrangements in place and that they would be able to start to see those children. That relationship didn't come to fruition for a range of reasons, and absolutely, you can't excuse it, but they struggled to recruit, the commissioners at the time just were unable to find a provider. Now, I'm not going to give any excuses to that because there are providers out there. I know it's sometimes difficult, but there are, and we've managed to find them, so we have to just hold our hands up. That's the history, that's where we were, but it's about moving forward and what we do now to go forward. So we went out to a mini procurement, and we'd already got a number of providers that we were working with on the mainland, so we approached them to see whether or not that they were interested. But we did go out to a procurement, open procurement, so that anybody was able to put forward a bid. At the time, we got 400, well, it was around 450, we actually got 480 children that were waiting for a service, and that included those that were on the ADRC backlog, which was around 200, plus the new referrals that have continued to come in since November, up to that point in time in September. We're still getting, obviously, referrals coming in now. So we were happy to have a selection of providers. We didn't just go out for one provider. We opened it up to say, if people can come in and what they can offer, we would be happy to talk to them. We had two providers that submit a bid. One was Seacon. Strange spelling, but it's Seacon Limited, and the other is called Helios Limited. Seacon, we worked with quite extensively in Hampshire, and they've done a huge piece of work for us, and they offer quite a unique service in that they're kind of a bit of a rapid response organisation. We're used to coming in to clear backlogs and to really develop a system that's sustainable going forward. And they've got a model together where they bring both the paediatrician, the psychiatrist, and the speaking language therapist into a room. I want to say all at the same time, but it's not quite all at the same time, but on the same day. So the child and family go along, they have a 3-hour session with all of the relevant clinicians, and then at the end of those 3 hours, they're able to draw upon their conclusions and tell the family there they have whether or not that child has autism, where they are on the spectrum. They also use, where they can, information, obviously lots of information that's provided from the family, and where it's required, any information that's provided from the school as well to back up some of those decisions that they're taking. So that's the one organisation. They started on the 8th of September. They offer weekend clinics as well as some through the week now as well. So that weekend clinic was really important because that was something that was really helpful for lots of families. Often getting time off work or taking children out of school isn't ideal, but being able to go over the weekend was something that was helpful in Hampshire, and they offered that on the island, and that's actually been well received by them, so we've had a lot of feedback about that. And then we've had Helios. They offer a different type of solution, and they've operated in quite a number of NHS organisations across the country actually, and it's more of a kind of Skype. It's technology based, so it is Skype. You do get to see a real person and you do get to speak to a real clinician, and they do the same kind of autism diagnostic process, but it's just via an online process rather than face to face in the clinic. It's not for everybody, it's personal choice whether or not that suits your family, whether that suits your child, whether that would work for you in terms of technology. For some, it is. Some it isn't. So we do have that as a, you must have that one of it. That was a choice that we wanted to offer to families. If they wanted it and if it would work for them, they could have it. But if not, they could stay on the traditional route of face-to-face route. So that's also been received really well. And then alongside that, we have Professor Turk, who was a full-time guide of Wight Trust. He's a couple of days a week, so he was never going to be able to do the volume of work that we required because of the backlog that we've got. But massively helpful in terms of his knowledge, his expertise, and he's kind of seen as a real guru in the field. So for him to be working on the island is really helpful. and he's really helping us in terms of some of those really complex children, so those that need lots of additional help and support, but also starting to think about what the future services might look like and helping us design and work with us on that. So that's infrastructure. We have, over the last couple of months, there's been a huge amount of activity taking place. We've had a welcome for the launch. We've set up a Facebook account. I think there's about 230 families now connected to that Facebook account. And it's been massively helpful. It's been really helpful in the sense that we've been able to respond to questions on almost a daily basis. So any family that's, you know, got a question about something, about the process, about where they are, we've been able to connect with people and really get to hear that feedback. So that's been really positive. We've done lots of communications out to families, so they've all been communicating with the fitness to everybody. We've done communications out to schools, and we're doing more of that. We met with Bob Seeley, and we had a roundtable discussion with our social care colleagues to look at how we can do more and what more we need to do. We've got surveys going out to schools and GPs to get feedback from them about how things are working, what we can do more and what we can do differently. We know that we're at the starting point here. We know that this is, you know, a moment in time. We've got to continue doing this. We've got an all-island event planned for next month, so we're going to be talking to all of the GPs to see how they can, what support they can add and what we can do more with GPs. And then we've got an engagement event with families booked, well, about to be booked for the end of January, so that we can start to get feedback from them. The early indicators are, so far, CCRN by Christmas will have seen 80 children. So that's a fantastic result for those 80 children. We know that we need to speed that process up, and we are. So we're on plan in terms of our trajectories, and that's good. Helios, the online solution, which I think was a bit of nervousness. I think we certainly talked about it from the LSCB perspective and from other places. Was it going to work? Is it going to be something that would be suitable for the island? So far, we've got 18 children in the system being supervised in Helios. So that's, you know, good, and we're looking forward to kind of getting the feedback from there. We've got another 16 children that we're waiting to get consent form back from families. They've indicated that yes, they're interested, yes, they want to do it, and we'll just be waiting for the consent forms. And then we've got about another 30 children, and when I say children, I'm talking about 16, 17, and 18 year olds that may be more suitable for a technology based solution. So we've offered those the opportunity to go with Helios if they want to, so we're just waiting back there. So I think actually we're starting to see that that online solution may be something that could be attractive. And we're just going to test it out, and if, you know, at the end, if people say it's not for us, then we can see. But we'll certainly be able to provide some feedback over the next few months about what people are saying about that service. The Helios face-to-face service, the 80 or so families, that I think they've seen about 60 so far. We've had 10 out of 10 from every single family, so we've got 100% in terms of the quality of their intervention and their experience that they had with CCRN. So that's really, really positive. We do know that we've had feedback from families post, so once they get their report in 5 or 6 weeks after they've had their assessment done, that they feel that the report doesn't quite tell them everything they want to tell them. So it's a diagnosis, and it says, you know, yes, your child has, or no, your child hasn't. But actually, I think they were expecting something slightly different, something that might either help with their education health and care plan more, or something that helps with their disability living allowance. You know, I think they were kind of expecting something different. And that's really good feedback for us, because I think what that learning is for us is, was it a diagnosis that you needed? And for some children, absolutely yes, it is. But or actually, was it an identification of kind of profile of what their needs are and how those needs can be best met within the school environment or the home environment? So it's just something for us to really reflect on and think about. We also know, as part of the work that we're doing, that we've done a lot of work looking at the speech and language and the OT of that. And we know that there's some strange commissioning activity going on there. So in some instances, you can't get access to a speech and language therapist or an OT until you've got a diagnosis. And that just it kind of feels a bit bonkers. It's like, why would you do that? You want access to the speech and language therapy and the OT before you even need to get a diagnosis. You know, that should be the last thing. What you need is access to the service. So we're working really closely with Catherine to look at how we can remodel that and what we can do to say, you know, let's change the pathway. That's clearly not the right way of doing it. I'll pause there just for a second, just see if there's any observations or questions on that.
Right, we start the capture on, but I'll work down the line.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you very much for a lot of reassurance there. I appreciate the position that we've come from. But I do have a couple of observations really that perhaps you can just expand a little on. We are talking mostly about the assessment process here, and it was very reassuring to hear you say that, because I know when we had the original flowchart, it was like all paths lead to a diagnosis or an assessment, and that has to change because, as we know, part of that process is not every child that comes through ends up with autism or an ASD. So I'm very reassured by that. But what I'd like to know is, obviously, as we catch up with this backlog, there are going to be, inevitably, a lot more diagnoses that are going to be positive, that are going to come into the system. So the next stage of this process, to my mind, is do we have capacity within the system to provide the kind of support and provision that all of these young people that are coming through are going to need? Thank you.
Really, really good question. And absolutely, that has been on our worry list too, because we're kind of saying, well, you know, is diagnosis the end game? Well, it's the kind of so what for us, then what happens then? It's the support that they need now, it's the support that they need ongoing that's most important, and that's the piece of work that Catherine's doing. So I think there's something about those children that have been waiting on waiting lists to suddenly say, we're not going to have a waiting list anymore, and actually we're going to give you your OT, or we're going to, that just wouldn't work, because families are waiting for something, and I absolutely get that. But there's something about how do we change the culture and how do we change the expectations of families and say, actually, you know, from today, you don't need to go down the diagnosis route. Yes, of course, some will, we get that, but actually, how do we put a system in place? And Catherine's been working on this kind of filtering panel system that almost has, so we've got speech and language, OT, paediatrician, somebody from Bernardo, somebody from autism, all around the table, where we're saying, right, here's the referral that's come in, what is the needs of this child being presented, what's the one people being presented with, and actually, let's try these options first, so let's give them some parenting, let's go and support them with some OTs, speech and language, or whatever it is that might need. And if all of that is still proving difficult, or still more needs are needed, then the final bit would be then the diagnosis. And I think it's just changing some of those behaviours and patterns. And it's, we've kind of got to do it in parallel, so we need to work through this process and also at the same time put this new process in place that will enable that. What we're looking at is our resource envelope to do that. So we've got commitment from the CCG to obviously continue with our resource envelope this year and do whatever it takes to bring those children through the system. But then more importantly, to invest next year in whatever that new model needs to look like and how we decide that.
Just on the back of that answer, because I just want to follow on from Angela, it's quite an important point. And I don't want to be a doom monger, but there is almost an inherent disappointment in the point at the point of diagnosis. Because the diagnosis will tell you, yes, you know, there's a problem here, but there's, you know, your child with Asperger's or on the ASD spectrum. But actually, there is no magic bullet. I know the bridge isn't converted, but I need to say that there is no magic pill, there is no solution. It's a led a long, hard battle for parents around changing behaviours, support and family, parenting in potentially a slightly different way, looking to professionals in a slightly different way. But there isn't something that takes away, What it will also lead to, and I'm telling you now, is that because of that inherent sort of disappointment, if I can put it that way, there will inevitably be a pressure on our education services around education, health and care plans. Parents who then believe, and I can understand it, I'm not being critical, but who believe that perhaps they now have gotten a diagnosis, their child is in some way entitled to a place at a special residential school or something like that. Fake. That isn't the case. Education, health and care plans are based on educational need, and as a local authority, our job, however hard that is that we have to ration, and we do have to ration, against the available resources and the need to get the resources. And if you follow the press, you'll see nationally there is a very big problem about what is called the high needs block. If you want to Google it and look it up, there is a national problem, it's dearly aware of, and people like me were telling them this 5 years ago, that the high needs block is critically overspent. Surrey, there was a report the other day, and Paige Bill, the director of Surrey, spoke to the All Party Parliamentary Group of Surrey by £30 million overspend on the high needs block. I'm using Surrey because they went public about it. And I know I can do this. And many authorities, and Surrey isn't the biggest problem by far. So that is a real problem. We will have to manage that system, and that will lead to us. We cannot give everybody what they want. We have to give children what they need. And that's part of our job. So I'm getting that up front. You may not like to hear that, but it's really important that I say it now. So you're not making you mean here's what I'm saying.
I think you're absolutely right, Steve. I think that's already started to play out this very week. So we've had a family that's had a diagnosis. They've gone back to school, waved their magic wallet around and said, here's my diagnosis, you now need to give me one-to-one, you need to give me this, you need to give me that. When the school spoke to Catherine and said, you know, they can't do this, they can't promise, but when we actually went through the court, it didn't say that. The family's interpretation of that diagnosis was, it's my ticket to lots of support. The report didn't actually say any of that. So I do think you're right, I think you have to be really careful about managing expectations and how, what level of support and what input we can give that is appropriate to their needs and not, you know, setting them to fail because they won't get it and then they'll be disappointed.
Councillor
Andre, if you could be
first. Yes. I do have personal experience of this, and I know how difficult it is and about that divide between parents' expectations. But I'm very reassured. So am I right in thinking that you are really, it's obviously got to be child-centred, but that you're sort of remodelling. So, and I know that this will be an ongoing process, so I look forward to further down the line having a report on the next stage as you've outlined. So thank you very much for that. Thank you.
Councillor Cameron.
Thank you, Chairman. That's explained quite a lot. There's no magic wand, as we know. He was talking about a survey to the GPs and the schools. We did include the parents in the same survey, or would you survey them from a different angle?
Thank you. So you're absolutely right, so this was done online surveys to GPs and to schools. We had a welcome launch on the 16th of October that was attended by 300 parents. What we did following that event was to then do an online survey. So at the event itself, we had some voting boxes, and we asked the parents specific questions. We you know, what would you like for the future, what are the challenges, what would you like to improve, and we followed that up with an online survey. With the Facebook page, we have 230 members who are all parents who are also connected to private parent Facebook pages, and they've been sharing those links to surveys and the links to the pages. So we're starting to get some really valuable, rich information and views around what parents and families want. Because I think it's really important that it does have to be child-centred, but it also has to be around how parents manage on a day-to-day basis. And what we've said is whatever this new future model looks like, it has to be co-designed with the parents, it has to be co-designed with the young people. We're absolutely doing that engagement with the children themselves as well as the parents. So it has to suit the needs of the children, it has to suit the needs of the parents, and it has to suit the needs of the schools. And we need to try and wrap that all up, and that's exactly what we're doing with that feedback.
Okay, thanks. Thank you.
Thank you. And Councillor Love?
Thank you. Sorry. Thank you for the report. The proof is in, as they say, the pudding is in the cooking, isn't it, really?
No, it's the eating, actually.
Oh, that's right. Yes, that's right. Nearly there. Might be a dyslexia coming out there. So, yes, I'm sure that we all deal with families as councillors who have got issues with autism, and it has been, there's been quite a lot of pressure, certainly out of a lot of pressure from parents. We've got a new service in place. Bob Seely says that the Isle of Wight is going to become a national leader in autism diagnostics and so on. I'd be quite happy, that's what he's got in the paper here, I'm reading directly from. I would be quite happy for it to work properly, never mind it being fantastic, okay? So that's the first step. We can look at that further on in terms of where we go from there. So it's about the output and the outcomes, really. I accept totally what you said there, and in fact, I'd like to hear a bit more about what the solutions are for that, in terms of the money's one thing, but there needs to be some sort of solution focus for that, because we do not want to end up in a, well, we are, by the sound of it, we are already in a really difficult position. So we need to start tackling that now, politically, you know, from our perspective. So, evaluation, okay? So we've got a new service in place. I want to hear a little bit, if I can, about the milestones, because we've got two new services in place. I want to be assured that there's some kind of system in place that monitors their performance and their outcomes. So this year we've got A, B, C and D. I want to know that at the end of this there's going to be a full review of what we've actually implemented and how and when, if that's at all possible for you to do. Because that's important. We don't, it's one thing getting a new service, and a lot of people go, but in actual fact, I want to know that that service is okay, and that, and I want to know what we're doing in order to ensure that that's happening. Thank you.
Thank you, absolutely, and I couldn't agree with you more. So we definitely have monthly contract review meetings with our new providers, so every month they're required to tell us the volume of children that they've seen, the outputs in terms of the quality of feedback, so every child and family that they see, they get feedback for, so that they're able to record, you know, their performance and measure how they're doing. Internally, each of the organisation also has a clinical quality assurance, so they are tested, so they randomly pick out cases as organisations, and they go through the process, and they look at all the paperwork, they look at all the decision making, so that they can make sure that there is consistency in terms of their decision making and what they've thought their assumptions and their final decisions are. So we absolutely check that performance and we check that quality on a regular basis. We also have our quality improvement team where periodically they do certain really camps, they go in and sit alongside our, those clinicians, and they observe practice, they observe decision making and what we do. So I think that we have that and we'd be very happy to provide regular updates. And I think, you know, we more than happy to come back. I know it's a standard agenda item to keep updating you on feedback that we're getting from families and the responses that we're doing with that.
I think in part you've given me the answer, but I'm not hearing what I'm really looking for, which is that there is a rigorous system already in place, which will provide a reporting structure. That's what I'm trying to get at. So we've got these people in place. We're going to do A, B, C. We're going to review on timelines. There's a specific process in place which comes back. That's what I'm looking for. Because what you said is what I would expect from any clinical, but what I want to know is that the agencies that we put in are doing what we want them to do. They're performing. I'm not interested in inputs, I'm interested in outputs. So I want to know that you've done that. I'm not sure that I've heard that you've actually said to me that we've got a system of evaluating it already in place now. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, we have. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay,
that's
right. And to be sure. Councillor Brady.
You're too rough with it.
I'm going to ask you again. I've been highly critical of this ECG, the press, this committee about youth advocacy. That's what we have. First of all, I met Andrew and sat down with Andrew and Catherine. And it's a big deal with youth advocacy children. CCG, to say that, but I'm not just inquiring, it was a starting point. Previous, we had never heard before. We talked about the way it was going to go forward, and I was like, I have total confidence in the ability of Andrew, Catherine, and the whole team to get this right. The evidence is already there, it started to move. We talked about the two companies, one I can't pronounce, it's the site company, I can't pronounce that. I'll change their name. We talked about Seacon, we talked about Helios. I had a concern about the online use of Helios, but it was about the option people with the option of how they use the service. I think a couple of examples. I know one person that's had an assessment already by Sycon, and they were totally impressed 10 out of 10. I spoke to someone this morning, purely by chance, who said that I said, I've got a meeting, so autism. I said, autism on the island is getting there, the service is in place. She said to me, I quote, my daughter was put in for an assessment in 2013. I'm still waiting. But, she said, I'll be given an appointment for next April. She said, I was offered the online service, but I looked at it and thought, no, I'm happy to wait till April. But that woman was totally happy that she would be given a choice, a date, and a choice, and her daughter was still on the list. I think that was a great testament. I said, that would be good. She said that to me this morning. The other thing I just want to mention are things we talked about are. It's about milestones. Originally, the first answer I had was we'll clear the backlog by next April, May time. I said, well, don't commit to what you can't deliver, because I'd rather hear what you deliver, that what you commit to. So the milestones will set for next August, which I think is realistic. 4 months to be clear in a year, I think it's totally realistic. It's a challenge, but it's a realistic that Andrew and Catherine will measure to. And we also talked about the pathway. We did do a roundtable with Bob Seeley. Halfway was mentioned about people have got to get them too quicker. And also the most important was the future service. Press observers looking at and Helios started looking at a long-term fit for purpose solution for the island wide. And that's what you all want to work to. So by next August, we'll have that fit for purpose system. And the final part I just want to mention is I'm trying to break this myth that an autism assessment gets you an HCP. It doesn't. Even some schools you're having aware of that. The two are totally non-connected. Our high needs budget is $1.5 million in deficit, and we've got a plan to sort that one out. And it's quite right, anyone gets on a plan will create pressure on high needs budget. But the problem, part of the problem, lies with schools, because if schools are quickly referring people, and schools aren't doing the early SEN work properly, then people can get referred, they're on the waiting list. So we'll do a lot of work with the Senko population in schools to make sure that they intervene early on, they've got the expertise to intervene, and then put our plans are ready to review. Because the key element of the plan is it's reviewed properly. So breaking the myth between people want assessments to get the HCP in the schools, don't need one. If someone on the list that Catherine's going through can initially just come off that, that even settle to get a plan, and lots of schools are of the opinion that they do. So there's lots of myths out there, but in summary, I've got total confidence in the system, the way it's set up. They will be able to account for those numbers. We're in a much better position than we were 3 months ago, and it's going forward at a rate of knots, so I thank you for that personally.
Would you like to reply?
Yes,
I would, thank you. I think just on the 2013, so we are aware of that particular family. And at the time of referral, the child was 16 months old. So there's a challenge there at when is the most appropriate time to diagnose a child. And what many places use across the country, and certainly in Hampshire they do, if a child's got developmental delay or they've got symptoms that may be autism, they do a kind of watch and brief up until the age of five. Some children, if they're really complex, they would do a diagnosis. But for most children, they would definitely be seen by a paediatrician, and they would definitely keep reviewing that child on a regular basis. It's very, very unlikely that a child at the age of 16 months would be diagnosed, because it's too early in their development for them to be formally diagnosed with that. So I think that was one of the reasons why that particular child has had such a long gap. So it sounds dreadful.
It's when I patient, that's in the now she's totally happy.
But I think that kind of, that, you know, the narrative of all the medical records since 2013, it sounds dreadful, and it absolutely is, but I guess it's that story behind it and the context behind it. So absolutely, on that point, I think you're absolutely right. But thank you for support. And I know that people are working really hard. I think we absolutely need to get the EHCP myth busted. And that's not just an Ireland thing, that's a Hampshire challenge that we have as well. And I think the more that we can work with schools to do that, getting the OT, getting the speech language in, and to avoid that having to go through to get the diagnosis, the better it will be. Because it shouldn't be driven by the EHCP. Certainly shouldn't be driven by a diagnosis, it should be needs-led, and that's what we need to get to. So.
I would like to ask Sean whether you have an autistic son. So we have a gentleman here with first-hand experience. Do you wish to comment?
Firstly, on the sheet, you say on 15th date, yeah, that's going to be finished by August. Well, that's five per week, that's 96 weeks, that's 92 years. That's just what's on here.
So I think I said at the beginning, the reason why the report was really short was because it was moving at such a pace of knots, and I think this report was probably written about 3 or 4 weeks ago. Having said that, we have now got more people signed up to go with the hearing loss method. We've got CCON are doing more than what was in there. So I think that we knew that the first month was going to be a bit slower because they needed to get started, and then they're going to start ramping up and doing more and more each month. One of the biggest challenges that we have, because a lot more could be done quicker, and this may be something that the community might be able to help us with, is that we just can't get the venues. If we could get some access to some venues, we could get more appointments in faster. But we're struggling to get venues, which are not charging us, you know, ridiculous amounts of money. So if anybody can help us access some venues, that we can do some of these clinics, we can do more.
The other thing that concerns me, I'm an autistic son who has the OCP. It's the intervention early on, because everything is locked down. There's going to be some clear guidance to these outside agencies, because everything is locked down. And most parents like me, it's a big fight. Every parent we talk to, the word fight comes in. It's not, I know they shouldn't have access to things, but school should be able to go, well, he needs this. Needs this. And a parent I was talking to is a year and a half to 2 years to see a speech therapist.
Absolutely agree with you. We absolutely need to change that pathway, because it's just not right. We need to get that intervention early to avoid the EHCP, to avoid the having to wait. You know, 2 years of a child's life is a massive impact at school, socially and educationally, and we cannot afford to miss, you know, the day, so we have to be able to identify as soon as possible, but then put the right intervention in. So one of the reasons for the filtering panel that we're setting up is that everything, so we can have the speech and language and the OT service at that panel available and then start to support support those children straight away, and everything is needed for you've got to go through this thing in order to get to that point. So we're absolutely working on that, and that's a really important area for us.
Yeah, I'm aware that's a key issue because most of the bottom of the school destroying classrooms, and kids on daily basis, and everything. Now it's the top of the school. It wasn't because of the AACP, but that system needs looking at. To get that AACP, he's sort of 9 chartered colleges, and only one of them wrote on it, which was the other one, council one. So that's all money going through disorganisation of writing the AACP.
Right, Councillor Howell.
Thank you, Chairman. I must say, I welcome this. I mean, I sit on health scrutiny and we fought very hard because we weren't happy. We were very disappointed where it's running, and I'm pleased to see that it's being taken up now and people are taking an interest. But is there any training for our teaching staff to actually help with dealing with autism? I mean, I, like Sean there, I've got a granddaughter that's autistic, but she lives in the States. And there's a lot of provision over there. She goes to speech therapy every day to another school and does speech therapy. She also goes to another school for special treatment to actually help her. And I just feel very sorry for these people on the island that are struggling to get be recognised. I mean, I'm sure you're going to push it, and I'm hopefully you're going to be able to maintain it and keep going until we actually solve the problem on the island, because there's been so much neglect over the last few years with autism. But I mean, we found it on house scrutiny that the neglect is very bad. And I know we're talking about people from the past, but we hopefully we can now move forward. The problem you've got is that you've not only been with the people that have come to now, but you're trying to pick up on all the people from the past that have been neglected. Do you think you'll be able to deal with this? And do you think that maybe in a year, a couple of years' time, it would actually be in the same position as maybe Hampshire are with their autism?
I'd like to say we're in a better place than we are in Hampshire, because actually Hampshire also got a lot of problems, and I think what we have to do, so I absolutely think yes, it should be the answer, and yes, it's the answer I want to give you. We will be in a better place as we are determined to do that, so I don't underestimate the challenges ahead, and I think some of it is about hearts, minds, culture, different ways of working, and putting those systems in place. And yes, we can absolutely do that. We're working really closely together to do that. So I think some of those system changes we can do. The Children's Commissioner released a report just this week about the demand on CAMHS services across the country and the volume of children who are going into CAMHS services. I think the prevalence at the moment is something like 12.8% of children have got a mental health need between the age of 5 and 18. And that is just huge. And that's going, you know, that's gone up since the recent survey. So that's massive. That's a huge number. And a huge percentage of that is around children who have autism or ADHD. So there's a massive amount of that. So in terms of our CAMHS providers, both on the mainland and the island, the demand that they're getting just to deal with those children who have got suicidal or anxiety or what you classify as kind of traditional mental health problem, they're struggling to see those children because of the demand that we've got from children coming through needing neurodevelopmental type diagnosis and assessment. So one of the things that we're seriously looking at across Hampshire and Island quality is actually should neurodevelopmental be a standalone service outside of the core mental health specialist service, so that actually gets treated and seen in a slightly different way, because, you know, a mental health diagnosis can be treatable. An autism diagnosis is something that you live with, it's part of you, it's who you are. So they're two very different things. So to kind of bash them in the same bracket feels not quite right. And there's different schools of thought on it, so you depending on who you talk to, will have a slightly different view. And there will always be those children that may have ASD or ADHD and have anxiety and suicidal thoughts and all the rest. And, you know, it's a mixture of challenges, I think, that we have to face. But we've certainly got difficulties on the mainland. We've got 1,000 children on the waiting list for autism that that actually CECON are now working with us on the mainland to do some of that work. So it's a challenge, it's a national challenge, it's not just an island challenge, it's not just a country challenge, it's a real problem. And one, I think the Children's Commissioner has, you know, really well set out this group in terms of her findings. I think some of the challenges that we need to do in terms of the health agenda, and it's something that we're committed to looking at, is that parity of esteem that, you know, everybody talks about. Have we got equal amounts of funding going into mental health as we have with physical health? If we're honest, the answer is probably no. And if we look at the difference between the amount of money that goes into adult mental health compared to children's mental health, it's also not equal and, you know, not balanced. So for me, there's something about that early intervention and prevention agenda. How do we stop these children becoming the adults? They're going to cost them a load of money more if they don't intervene earlier. So, you know, our challenge is how do we get them to them, when I say them, I mean, you know, how do we get the system to kind of say, actually, let's plow a load more money into the children's agenda, because actually we can make them more sustainable adults, it'll cost us a lot less in the future. But that's, you know, that's a balance that we have to do in terms of the challenges that we have financially across the system and how we work that. But that is the sensible way of doing it. So we keep on that.
Thank
you.
Thank you.
That what you're saying, because I feel that we know the problem is that more and more children are being unidentified. And with the having the internet available for people to look on the internet and find a diagnostic for their own children, they're being identified more.
Councillor Howe, we have a couple of other people who want to ask questions.
Well, I only wonder if I had the same amount of time as the cabinet member, actually.
Well, that's my fault as chairman then, and I apologise. Councillor Love.
Thank you. I feel encouraged because I can see that we're making progress in diagnostic services. I'm slightly concerned about some of the things that I've heard about how it all looks up behind that. I'm more interested in solutions, to be honest, because we can spend a lot of time. I think we understand the problems. What we need to focus on is the solutions. And when I hear 30 million, in debt for critical services, I then start, so I kind of guess that sets alarm bells up in my head saying, and what are we doing? How are we addressing that? I want to know how we are starting to write them, what will be a deficit for us by the looks of it or the sounds of it. What are we doing? That's one bit. But the other question is also, we've got schools who have got failing budgets for one reason or another, who haven't got the staff, and we need to start thinking politically about what we're going to do to address these particular shortfalls. But I don't want to hear about the shortfalls, I want to hear about the solutions, if that's at all possible.
The solutions are not local. You can't solve this problem through a local solution. The solutions are national, and I've raised this issue with the Secretary of State myself. I mean, that's just, I can't.
Is there anything that we can do?
No, at this stage,
just support you.
No, at this
let
stage,
finish.
I'm grateful for the offer. It's a good and helpful thought. We've got plans in hand to manage the current issues. The noises and the intelligence from the DfE is that some additional funding will go into the high needs block that's what we're hearing. And until that is either confirmed or denied, then I would keep our pound dry. If there was a scenario where that money was eventually not forthcoming, then I think this council, but frankly, most councils, would write to the Secretary of State saying this is not a sustainable position in terms of the high needs schools budget. Okay, so for this moment, the message that we're getting from our colleagues in the DNC, the civil servant, and partly from ministers, is that there will be something in the spending review next year.
Right, I think that's the last question on this subject. Thank you, everybody, and thank you for your input, Steve.
Thank you.
I hope you haven't found it too taxing. I would like to say that our next meeting is in March. You have 4 months.
No pressure.
No pressure. And hopefully you can come back and we can progress this. If I warn you now that we would ask you to come back in March, please. Thank you very much. If you wish to go, I realise you have bonus to collect as well as our Hampshire people do, but if you do wish to go, thank you once again for coming.
I was just going to make the offer, if you'd like us to bring a wider paper, not just on the authors and whilst, yes. You know, we absolutely want to give you an update on this, but in terms of the wider system transformation and the CAMS generally,
yes. I'm
very happy to extend that and do more of a presentation on the whole system and where we're at.
That would be very useful. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, that would be very useful. Thank you. Too. If it could go to the set, thank you. Right, our next item, quarterly performance data.
Thank you, Chair. Just by the way,